This is Beyond the Divide, traversing the experiences in the world of disability. I'm Harrison Kirkwood, your host for this podcast series, produced by Singleton Council and proudly supported by the New South Wales State Government. Jo Tonan is a dedicated and passionate teacher. She is also an advocate for students with disability. She is a mother to her son Jasper, who lives with autism. Her blend of experiences in being a parent of a child with a disability, a teacher for a support class for students with additional needs, and her career as an educator overall have allowed her to gain unique and valuable insights to share with us today. Hi, Jo. How are you this morning?
Good, thanks, Harry. How are you?
Good, thank you. So, Jo, what drew you to the teaching profession and how long have you been teaching for?
I've been teaching for 10 years, and prior to that I was working in private business doing administration, and I went to uni to do my qualification in accountancy and swapped over to education after volunteering at my children's school in the support unit. They needed a hand just for a couple of hours a week to do some play type therapy, and I really enjoyed working with the kids and found it really rewarding and decided to formalise it and actually become a teacher. And for the 10 years that I've been a teacher, 7 of those I've worked with children with additional needs.
Wow, that sounds very interesting. So prior to going to volunteer, when you thought this might be something I want to do more of in my life, what were your initial impressions about inclusive education or how we supported children with additional needs?
I think my knowledge was very limited. One of my children had struggled with reading, and she'd been given some opportunity at school to have some catch-up lessons, but that was about as much as I really knew. And it wasn't until I started working in that support unit as a volunteer that I realised the challenge that the families had in accessing services like inside and outside of education, and how long a wait it could be for some people to gain access to services. When I was doing that volunteer work, I then had my youngest child. He has autism, ADHD, and he has a level 2 autism diagnosis. And it was when I started the process of trying to access a pediatrician and a psychologist and an OT and trying to gain intervention for him, I found that that was really challenging. And I wanted to become more educated about how to help him. And so that led to my pathway in education, helping other children that had additional needs.
Wow. And your experience at uni when you're getting your qualifications in teaching, did they prepare you well to support children or students with additional needs, or was this a training in that regard at uni limited?
I would say it was limited. In my degree, we did one subject in special education, which covered off a range of disabilities, from physical to behavioural. And, you know, it's a 12-week course, a normal semester. And we did another subject, behaviour management, which looked at perhaps ADHD children in your classroom. But there were no actual courses or topics done on how to differentiate, how to change the program and adapt it for children that had additional needs. So whilst we learnt to adjust the program up and down to cater for abilities, it wasn't in depth, and it was challenging when I went out to teach how to do that. So it was a case of you learnt to do it on the job, and you learnt from teachers that had more experience, and you had to consult with them and learn. So a lot of collaborative learning in them early years as a teacher to learn how to manage and supply the needs of all the children in the class.
Mm, I think I can imagine, well, resonate actually with what you're saying. You know, myself having a complete vision impairment and attending schooling in Singleton in the public sector and being the only student with a vision impairment at both my primary and high schooling years meant that often I would be conversing with my teacher and we would be discussing together about how the lesson could be adapted to meet my needs. And something that I observed was they were unfamiliar. They were kind of learning on the spot and sort of adjusting from what did or didn't work on previous attempts. So it was really a practical, collaborative effort, and they didn't really seem to have a prepared toolkit, if you like, of how to tackle those situations before they occurred. So I'm wondering, from your perspective, do you think it would be helpful if there was increased training or support in this area at uni to better prepare teachers to meet students' diverse needs?
Yeah, I think so. And I know that the teaching degree that I undertook and what is currently offered is a little different. They have addressed some of those things in the degrees, and I can't speak for every university, but the ones that I've attended, that's been the case. I also know that there are a lot more training. There's a lot more training available to teachers once they're in the, like, so once you're teaching, there are online courses and the opportunities to attend different professional learning to help you specialise in that and to gain skills. So you don't have to be just a special ed teacher. You can be across all classes and access those courses. So I think the quality of training has improved over that 10 years from when I started to what is now.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that that teachers, if they haven't experienced personally a personal connection with anyone with a disability, that they find that daunting and are unsure on how to approach it. But once you've had that student in your class and you can see how to make adjustments and work with the family and the team around that child, I feel that it comes easier for the teacher to make adjustments.
Mm. I feel that it was all about building the relationship in my experience to gain more inclusive education. You know, I guess, as I said before, talking about what worked and what didn't work. And I think also by my own observation, the teacher learning over time and not being afraid to ask questions and not being fear or paralysed with being afraid of saying or doing the wrong thing, even though you are uncertain, they may be uncertain at times, are really some strategies that can help in those situations.
Yeah, I believe that for any child at school, the success is based on having a team approach. So whilst the teacher's the person delivering the education at school, you need families on board to support that child. So it doesn't matter who the child is at school and whether they have additional needs, they need the support of both home and school to have success and to have that open communication. And you're right, relationship is everything.
Mm.
And that underpins how you connect with the student, how you can accommodate their needs, how you can deliver an engaging lesson, and so that the child also develops a value for education. Mm. So the relationship that you have with your students is really key to success for children having a great education.
Mm. Mm. No, I think what you're saying is very valuable and has a lot of merit behind it. So obviously your son, Jasper, has autism. So I guess you can come to it from that approach, and also you have the advantage of being a teacher. So I'm sure the general community listening to this podcast can appreciate the importance of inclusive education and that a collaborative approach, given what you've spoken about. To help them understand a bit more how that would practically translate to the classroom, what would be kind of the process, or what would some of the help look like when a student started school, for example, with a diagnosis of autism? How would that child actually be supported, and what would be in place?
For a child coming into, say, kindergarten, beginning their school journey, usually they've come to sort of a transition prior to school where teachers have been able to meet with parents as well and identified if there are different diagnoses, and, you know, every child is different and reacts differently to different things. So what might be their strengths and their weaknesses. Mm-hmm. So I think from a parent point of view, it's about being open that your child faces challenges with perhaps, you know, whatever their diagnosis is. It might be a physical challenge, it might be an emotional or behavioural challenge, but I think you have to advocate for your child the best you can, and in you're the best person to advocate because you know your child the best. So it's about being open, and no one is being critical. And I think sometimes parents are frightened that their parenting is being criticised. Mm-hmm. And it's not about that. It's about gaining as much information as possible so that the child is supported successfully. Mm-hmm. And in those early years, a lot of the times the child goes straight into a mainstream, like an ordinary classroom, and they may not always have the supports. They mightn't have, the school mightn't have access to the funding for a teacher's aid. So sometimes it's just up to the teacher to be supporting that child. And so building that relationship with the parents and building the relationship with the child takes time, and then the process, depending on the how significant the disability is and how you access funding, takes a process of talking to the teacher and talking to the learning and support team and then talking to the school counsellor and having the documentation from your own private, like going to the paediatrician or the occupational therapist or the speech pathologist, psychologist, all of that documentation all put together, and you can apply for funding. So not every child it depends on the level of their disability, so not every child is successful in gaining funding. But once identified, then the teachers are able to put in place an individual education plan, or they might call it a personalised learning plan, and that's where the adjustments can be made. So, Harry, you would have had one of those all the way going through school where you would have replaced, instead of reading the book, you might have had an audio book provided for you, or your text may have been in Braille if you can read Braille. So the adjustments would be made in consultation with the student and the family about what best suits them. Mm. So I think the process is daunting for parents, especially of really young children, when they're just trying to find out what works best for them. And sometimes the challenges are not just at school, it's challenging at home to provide support as well. And sometimes they need extra support at home. And so trying to access all of that at once can be very overwhelming for families.
Mm, I can hear what you're saying and can relate to a lot of it in a variety of ways. It can be a lot to take on, and knowing what you're entitled to and how to access that support and what you should feel comfortable and confident in and advocating for your rights, you know, all of those kind of things, and accessing funding, and sometimes if there is no teacher's aid or learning support officer present in the room and there is only the classroom teacher, I guess that is the importance of valuing and fostering independence. And, you know, sometimes the nature of the disability can make that challenging. And, you know, getting all those reasonable adjustments into place takes time and isn't an overnight fix. You know, having, for example, all of my materials in audio or braille, things like that, you know, there's translation time required, obviously extra time to get through the material, to read the actual material, not being able to skim read, and, for example, but then still try to keep up with the rest of the class pace, you know, can be a struggle. So I hope that, you know, we are both empathetic to the challenges that these families face, and I know that we are. If you gave a parent who had a child starting school with a disability one piece of advice to encourage them on their journey, what would that be?
Get in early and speak to the school early and speak to your allied specialists early, to be trying to have some intervention happening prior to school so that transition to school is a success. Many students who have autism have not had success at preschools. So they, because that social integration is a challenge for them, they have found that going to preschool has been challenging and there's been perhaps behavioural issues. If the parents can be working with a team and but the child be supported in that setting, then it becomes more successful for the student to understand what is happening at preschool and then coming to school where they're there for longer hours. It enables them to feel more comfortable with the changes. And it could be, you know, just having that known person there to support them for a few hours a week at each location, or it could be that social stories and time spent explaining what the process is so that they've got time to process and understand how things work. It could be enabling the school to put things in place. They might need to ensure that they have a lift or that they have the appropriate toileting resources or that they have the correct seating for a child. If they're in a wheelchair, they might, you know, go in and out of the chair and onto a mat and make sure that allows the school time to make sure that they've got the resources there to support that student as well. Also, speaking early to the school means that the student can be placed with a teacher that perhaps has a better understanding of the disability and can better support that student. And if it's in a school where perhaps that's a new type of disability to the staff, they haven't worked with someone with that type of disability, that they might send the staff for training so that the staff have gained some knowledge of how to approach to make the adjustments and to support this child. So I think that's the key, is but getting in early and not being frightened to go, you know, I know it's 18 months away from my child starting at your school. They're only 4, but, you know, it's about having that conversation, the preliminary conversation, and then putting the things in place to support the family and the child in, and that transition from preschool to school or primary school to high school. And so having those conversations and the whole team then, because it is a team, it's, you know, the student, the family, the learning support team, the class teacher, all need to be on board to ensure that it's all happening and all the information is handed over for when the child transitions to each stage of their education.
It's very clear, Joe, that you have lots of suggestions and experience in this space and providing ideas to parents on the range of things they might want to put into place, from ranging from facilities, physical facilities such as, you know, processes around toilets to other supports that look after this child's socio-emotional well-being, such as social support time and time to talk through things that are happening with a student, to see how they're feeling and what can work for them, to, you know, obviously upskilling teachers so they're better equipped to support that student's particular disability. You've gained this experience through time and your personal experience and obviously just working in the industry. What do you wish you knew as your younger self starting in teaching and special education? What advice would you give someone else who is just starting that road as a teacher and perhaps feels daunted?
I think not be frightened to ask the questions, not be frightened to ask for help. And we're not all equipped with all the knowledge, so it's okay to learn as we go. And to do that, you know, access more experienced teachers or online training. But take the time to learn what you're going to be doing and to learn about the children in your class. So even in a mainstream class, there's a mix of kids that have a range of needs, and to know all of your children and build the relationship takes time. So you need to be patient with yourself, and just, I suppose the key is, you know, as a teacher, you're forever learning, and be open to suggestions and knowledge from others, and be a team player. I think it's really important to be a team player to learn all of that.
No, thank you. They're excellent insights, and I think any other teacher starting in the profession will really benefit from those ideas and tips that you're being able to share, and just that mentoring aspect, having other people talk about what they've gone through and what worked for them, I think helps other people coming along. And why, for example, in my personal experience, I mightn't have realized at the time a bit of advice that someone's given me, when I look back on, I think, oh yes, that is right, and that would have been something that was very useful for me at the beginning. So seeking those mentors, asking questions, and not being, you know, afraid. You just touched on the mainstream setting for students, and there can be a variety of students in a classroom with varying abilities, even without having additional needs. It's obviously a controversial debate happening in society at the moment, particularly with the release of the Royal Commission's inquiry into inclusive education. But I think every view and opinion is entitled to be respected. And it's something that our listeners mightn't fully understand if they're not experiencing it day to day. But what are your thoughts, Joe, on mainstream integration for students with additional needs being fully integrated into mainstream classrooms, and phasing out support units altogether? Or do you think they both have a role to coexist with one another? And if so, why?
I think it's really important that they coexist, and that I feel that it's very important that we keep support classes. Not all students integrate easily and need smaller class sizes for specialised support. That, while saying that, I think that, you know, there's still a big opportunity for students to integrate with peers, with their cohort, in a wide range of activities throughout the school, and are included in things like athletics carnivals and assemblies and sporting opportunities, or choir or drama, the extracurricular.
So yeah, Joe, the importance of coexisting education options for students with additional needs, I agree, is perfectly clear, because in the settings of support units, you can get that tailored, specialised help that you need, and if you are able to participate easily in mainstream classes, you obviously have that option available to you too. Obviously, social inclusion in society and social inclusion more specifically in the schoolyard and in the school community is something we all want to achieve and something I guess you're focused on in your role, Joe. And this narrative has been going on for a long time, though. How do you actually think we bring this to a reality? You know, take it from the conversation to real life reality.
I think it's about social education for people in and out of schools. Like, it's schools are a great place to start in educating students as they come through about how to interact and what the disability is. Like, even defining, you know, this is a particular type of disability, these are the types of things this person will encounter, and making it a matter of fact thing. Like, that's just the way their life is. It's no different than, you know, another kid has to wear glasses to see the board. So I think about making it an acceptable conversation and an open conversation, and starting with, you know, having that program where you educate the kids at school to so that they feel comfortable, and the student themselves with their disability, about them feeling comfortable about talking about it, not feeling that they have to hide or that they can't be a part of another group. So I think that's important. And I think, you know, from there we could educate parents through, you know, programs or even items included in school newsletters. Having this conversation today has made me think, well, how could I better inform my school community? And that could be through the school newsletter or offering things like, you know, opportunities to listen to podcasts like this or accessing other podcasts that may talk about the different disabilities. I think in society as a wider community, the media has been doing a lot to improve so that people are seeing a person that resembles them on screen, whether that be, you know, somebody in a wheelchair or what race they come from or what culture they come from. And there are certainly some people that are promoting that. And I think seeing like Kurt Fearnley doing his programs and other athletes that are promoting themselves and being approachable to advocate for people is helping. And I think we just need to have more of that, but maybe on a local level, so people can feel connected and understand that perhaps the people that live in the group home down the road are not so frightening, that they're just like us every day. They got to do their stuff the same as us, where everyone gets up and has breakfast and gets on with life. So I think that's just a communal education about how to accept and to support, because I think in generations past, people with disabilities were hidden away, and we have come a long way. I have a uncle who was globally delayed, and when he was a child, family wanted to put him in an institution, and my grandparents wouldn't allow that. They wanted him to learn skills so that he could participate, and he worked and, you know, worked as a gardener for years and supported himself. So I think it's important that we advocate for people and say, like, everybody's a participant in the community and everybody has something valuable to contribute.
No, I think they're very wise and empowering words, Joe. It's been a very informative discussion, and we've spoken obviously about the educational, academic aspect around adjustments and support through to the social inclusion of students in the school community and more broadly in the community at large. In rounding out our conversation today, what for our listeners to take away something, what would be your one hope for the future for your students with additional needs in life?
I hope that every person has the opportunity to access and participate to the best of their ability in life, and that they, that every person is supported by a great network, whether that be family or friends or a service that provides support. But I feel that every person, no matter where they come from or what they've got going on, should feel that they can be a valued person in our community.
Wow, I totally agree. And that's totally invaluable words there, Joe. It's been a delight having you join me on the podcast today. Thank you so much for sharing all your insights, and great work, and I commend you for all you're doing to improve the educational experience for students with additional needs, and all the best to them and yourself for the future, and hopefully we can continue improving things together.
Thanks, Harry. Thanks for the opportunity to advocate for a great bunch of people in my life. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe.